What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, your morning pitching podcast from pitcherlist.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is September 4th. And yes, we are going to talk about baseball. Oh my gosh. What do you do with Eury Pérez? Him and George Kirby really let you down. Maybe Aaron Nola did too. It was a tough day. Maybe Robbie Ray had on your teams too. Well, we're going to start with Fatal Eury. And that was four innings of 700 runs, eight hits, one walk, and two strikeouts. Should you hold on to this? So this was against the Nationals. The previous game was against the Mets. He got bamboozled. And if you don't know what bamboozling means, for me, it's 300 runs or more in that first frame. Eury didn't even last the first frame. He got pulled at 40 pitches with 2 outs in that last game. That's just a bad day. It's a bad inning. He got bamboozled again. This time it was with three bases awarded in the first inning through a stolen base or a wild pitch or a balk as well. And then he had two hits off of fastballs, a bad hanging curve. So that was 5 runs in that first inning. And it was just, it was so tough. So is he now cooked? Do you just kind of move on from Eury Pérez? No. I actually think he's still very good. I know that sounds wild to say, but I think that Eury is better than this. Yes, his plan of attack against left-handers is a bit of the problem against the Nationals, sure, but it was a hanging sweeper at a 1-0 pitch to a right-hander for a two-run shot in that first frame. I really think that Eury is much better than this. It's a good schedule. I don't want to say that these two starts, where his velocity is fine and he still should be getting success, where it didn't work out, is now suggesting that he's cooked. I don't think that's the case for Eury, and I'm holding even in a repeat matchup against the Nationals. Bryce Elder, on the other side of it, my gosh, he gets the gold star because he went 7 innings shutout against the Cubs. Are they sure they didn't get those lines backwards? 7 innings, 0 runs, 4 hits, 0 walks, and 6 strikeouts. Is this a Vargas rule now for Bryce Elder? I can't start him a second time against the Cubs. This is just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. And I know the changeup was helpful with the lefties. The four-seamer was above it. That made it better. The sinker and slider were really good at getting called strikes, at getting outs, at getting strikeouts. I just can't buy it from Bryce Elder. I'm so sorry. If you want to make your playoffs a whole thing about Bryce Elder, you do you, but I won't do that. But Zach Gallen, I might. I think we can take off the tiara that is turning around right away. We've been waiting for so long with Zach Gallen. It didn't happen to Tanner Bibee. But it is happening to Zach Gallen. He went against the Rangers, who are very much wounded and not nearly at their peak prime at the moment. But it's 6 innings, 0 runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 5 Ks. And yes, people have peak primes, okay? Those are things, maybe. Only 2 whiffs, which is very interesting. But he was sitting 93-94. He has had higher velocity past 93 in the second half when it was more like 92.5 to 93. Earlier in the season, his previous start was 94.2. This was 93.6. But what's happening is that he embraced the slider to right-handers that helped him get a lot of outs in this one. But yeah, just 2 whiffs is kind of weird. And I am going to say yes against the Giants. It's been 4 starts now of Gallen actually producing, so I think you got to do it. Giants at Giants next, I believe, and then hosting them in Arizona. So good luck, everybody. Let's hope that Zach Gallen can pull this off. Matthew Liberatore pulled it off against the Athletics. 5.1 innings of 0 runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 7 strikeouts. His fastball velocity went up a little bit by the end, but he's still fighting to hit 93 miles per hour, not 94, 95. His curveball was very unreliable. He threw it 21% of the time, but 1 out of 4 were just non-competitive, which is not what you want. 24% NC rate is terrible. You want that to be under 10%. And now he gets to go to Seattle, which is nice sipping at the tea, but I'm kind of scared of Seattle a little bit. I wouldn't want to do that. And if Liberatore is good enough there, then fine. I would go for a start against the Reds carpet for Liberatore, but I just don't think that it's good enough in my view. Cade Horton, oh my gosh, I messed up, guys. He left the game early about 3 weeks ago. 3 weeks ago, he left the game early with a bluster. And I pretty much said, you know what, he's got to hit the IL. They're going to protect him. He's got his playoff run. I don't want to go with this. He's been fantastic since. And he was fantastic against Atlanta. He allowed 0 hits in 5 innings of shutout ball. 0 hits. He had a no-hitter. It was one walk in six Ks, seven hits, 29% CSW, and 75 pitches. And he said that actually the game plan beforehand was to go about 75 pitches. Like, they told Horton, this is what you're going to go for. He says it helps him because he can game plan it. He knows when he's going to be coming out, how he can try and navigate those and get through the innings with a budget, essentially. And I just wish he never had that blister because it really messed me up. He did get a little help from Koufax. And there is that section of it with the cut fastball at 76% strikes and 50% usage. And it didn't allow a hit, of course. The two-plane sweeper is doing well. And I do want to mention that Kane Horn, yes, we're probably going to do this again versus Atlanta. However, it's highly unlikely to get a quality start. He's going to be around 75 pitches. So you might see like 4.1 innings or so. Keep in mind, with zero hits and one walk, he still needed 75 pitches to go five innings, which is right at the limit. So let's say he allowed a base runner or so, they're going to let him in for that. This might have been 4.2 innings here, believe it or not. So keep that in mind with Cade Horton. It's not an automatic lock. I think the ceiling is a little limited for some situations. Now, I am getting the report right now that Brandon Sproat is getting called up by the Mets for Sunday, which I got to understand a little bit better because I believe he's not on the 40-man, so there has to be a corresponding move. We'll see what happens there. But I am not interested in that start at Cincinnati, so he's not an auto add. I don't like starting guys in MLB debuts. There are some rare exceptions. I don't think Sproat is that at Cincinnati. However, I was looking at Sunday, and there are not too many amazing outings to go for. So that is one of the better desperate plays to go for on Sunday, Brandon Sproat. Good luck. It was supposed to be Tyler McGill, but he's not stretched out too far, and this might be some piggyback situation. I don't know what they're going to do. So don't feel like you need to jump over everything to go and get Brandon Sproat, even though he's getting the call for Sunday. All right. Braxton Ashcraft knows a thing about a pitcher getting called up and him messing around with piggyback stuff. This was three innings against the Dodgers that was shut out, and then Mike Burrows came in for three shutout after. Yay, I'm so happy for everyone. Mike Burrows got the win and a vulture win that you did not expect whatsoever here, and you don't want to touch either of those guys. Joey Cantillo actually made a surprise start for the Guardians with Logan Allen going tomorrow. They pushed back the rotation, might be going six-man. It might be something weird of maybe Tanner Bibee or Gavin Williams getting some breaks as the Guardians are starting to realize, okay, maybe we don't make the playoffs and we want to preserve these guys for next year. And also, Joey Cantillo is great because he went six innings, one run, five hits, two walks, and seven Ks in Fenway, got the win. He should be starting. He should not have been in the minors. I don't understand this. He's awesome. And I mean, look, if Cantillo is getting regular starts, I'm in. The Guardians do not have a series that I'm just flat out avoiding for Cantillo. Yeah, sure, they have to host the Royals and go against the Twins. Those are the toughest ones. That's not enough for me to say no. Zebby Matthews, speaking of the Twins, against the White Sox, got his revenge from the other game he went against the Chicago White Sox. Six innings, one run, three hits, two walks, and five strikeouts. His four-seamer was still not upstairs. I want him to do that with a 1.4 head adjusted VA and 18 to 19 inches of vert on that 96-plus heater. I still haven't seen that. It's really, really annoying, but the secondaries are really good, right? The cutter, the slider, he had some changeups that were nice. That is cool. I don't think I can bank on this precision plateau for Zebby Matthews, unfortunately. It's just not quite the kind of pitcher that we've seen locate everything as we want to, right? He throws strikes a lot. I'm glad it worked out. But he does get Los Angeles next, and they're not that good, and maybe you want to try it a second time, and I'm fine with it. I just feel like Zebby Matthews hasn't quite done enough. I mean, it was only 5 Ks in 6 innings, keep in mind, right? It's not like he's absolutely blowing guys away. So keep, you know, do this however you feel comfortable, okay? Make sure it's not an idea that Zebby Matthews is like, oh yeah, he's going to have his 10 strikeout game or something next time. There might be some more safer floors to go for. All right, we're going to talk about other guys, including Yoenis Gomez and Ryan Burger, these young arms that are making impacts right now. Both of them went five innings, one run. We're going to talk about both of them and many more after this break. Yoenis Gomez at Minnesota, five innings, one run, seven hits, one walk, and five strikeouts. He keeps improving because this time he featured a sinker more than the four-seamer. 17 inches of run, which is pretty cool. However, I should take back the improving thing a little bit because he's at 93 now. No. This is supposed to be like 95 plus, isn't it? His four-seamer was at 94. He had 6 for 26 whiffs on the sweeper, which is nice. That really worked well against right-handers. The changeup was a surprise floater to lefties that worked out for called strikes, which is kind of cool. He'll host the Rays next, which is actually a pretty good matchup. But I don't really think that he's someone to chase in 12-teamers. I think the drop in velo is a little scary. He certainly has the shag rug, the young man's floor, and I would try to avoid that. And yeah, it's not really a move you want to make for 12-teamers. For 15-teamers, I'm okay with it. I think actually Gomez will be targeted for that one. Ryan Burgert against the Angels, 5 innings, 1 run, 1 hit, 3 walks, 6 Ks, and that's awesome. That is so nice, and he gets the Guardians next with his good sweeper, his four-seamer that gets an extra vert more than expected from his arm angle. It's great. It's not a wonderful matchup against the Guardians. It doesn't make sense in my head for it to work out really well because of the sweeper being the primary secondary, which is one of my favorite phrases, and which doesn't really work well against upstanding batters. You know Kleeman's going to go a lot of lefties. Now, the four-seamer does have a little bit extra vert and a little bit extra, I think, cut than expected based on the arm angle. So that could mean that four-seamer does well against lefties and could be why he's, I believe someone mentioned yesterday, his platoon splits reverse platoon splits. I apologize for that for Burgert. I think I'm going to go with that one, but then the schedule gets really tough for Burgert, so we're not going to do that. Caden Dana, look at this. He got a start, and it was 5 innings, 1 run, 2 hits, 1 walk in, 4 Ks, 4 whiffs, and 70 pitches. There were some times it was nice. He could gas it up to 97 or whatever, but he really set 94, 95. It's an average four-seamer, dead zone movement. You know, it's not really what you want. It's probably actually below average. And I just am not seeing enough to chase. Maybe he can get a quality start if he does continuously start because he throws enough strikes. But yeah, Caden Dana is not the guy you really want. Casey Mize against the Mets. 5 innings, 1 run, 5 hits, 0 walks, and 3 strikeouts. He went Blake Snell blueprint effectively to lefties with 4-seamers up and splitters down. That's really cool. He's also at 95.7 on his 4-seamer against the Mets. Got that win. And that's cool. He also got away with many of these sinkers to right-handers that were very much in the middle of the plate. He was fortunate to only allow, I believe, one hit on those sinkers. But it was only 60, it was about 68 to 70 pitches or so. It was around 70, a little underneath that. And Mize, he's just such a Toby. And now he gets the Yankees. It's not really for me. I don't feel like this is the guy you got to go for. Brendan Bernardino, yeah, he's an opener here in 1.2 innings of 1 run. And eventually we got to Zach Kelly of 4 innings and Dustin May for 3. This happened because Kyle Harrison had apparently a minor ankle injury, and his call-up from the minors for his debut with the Red Sox was delayed. So we got those two guys. Dustin May ain't what you want. Neither is Zach Kelly. Jack Leiter had an amazing outing. He got the King Cole at 34% CSW because Emmett Sheehan only went 4.2 innings, and you need a minimum of 5 innings to get the King Cole. But Leiter went 6 innings, 200 runs, 3 hits, 3 walks, and 8 strikeouts, 18 whiffs, 99 pitches. I watched this. Yes, he allowed annoying runs in the first and second inning, and then he really cruised after that. There are moments when he just looks so good. The four-seamer upstairs put away some guys. We saw a really good slider to a lefty for a strikeout, the changeup as well. There are some great moments with Jack Leiter. The thing is, it's still erratic. It's still this chaos inside of outings. You know, the first two innings were a lot of chaos, and then it settled down. But also against righties, we're seeing the sinker more than the four-seamer. I don't know why. The four-seamer should dominate right-handers. And he's going with a sinker instead, which is okay if it's mixed like 15% of the time and gets inside with the four-seamer as the predominant pitch, but that's not what's going on. Drives me a little bonkers, and you have the slider not working well against them either. It just feels a little odd, and I can't buy into it fully, even though we know this stuff is good. We know he can look so dominant at times, right? So it's up to you. It's a coin flip against the Brewers for Jack Leiter next. I hope he's Jack Zippo and he's not light in his production. Or lighter in his production. Okay, fine. Jeffrey Springs in St. Louis was sunshine and rainbows because that changeup went 9 for 21 whiffs and the slider earned all these outs with 77% strikes. And now he gets the Red Sox in Sacre Verde and in Fenway, and you don't want either. Will Warren against Houston, 5 innings of 200 runs, 5 hits, 0 walks, and 4 Ks. I talked about Will Warren with Ian Osiris on The Craft yesterday. If you don't listen to that podcast, you should. It's an hour each week with me and Eno just talking about every pitcher we can think of and we want to get each other's opinions on. And Will Warren I asked Will Warren or Luis Gil, and the way I see it is that Luis Gil should be getting better as he returns from Tommy John and gets more into a groove, while Will Warren is kind of hitting fatigue and he's had a worse second half, and he looked at it, Eno did, and saw that the stuff has gotten worse over the past month. He got through this one against the Astros, only 5 whiffs. 67 pitches. He got fortunate. Thank you, Koufax, for making this work out. Okay. The changeup isn't doing a whole lot. The sweeper is fine, but the four-seamer and sinker are still leading the way, and it's just like, what is going on? I guess I'm going to chance this against the Tigers next, but man, do I just not trust Warren for the full stretch. So be careful. If you have to get a start this weekend, I would imagine that dropping Will Warren is one of the better bets that you can make, or one of the better ones you can drop and move on from. Mitchell Parker against the Miami Marlins. Well, he is interesting. Why? Because he's doing the Blake Snell blueprint. Four seamers are up and curveballs are down, and he just missed making it through because he threw a splitter. There's a home run to Joey Weimer for 2 runs, and that was prevented him from going 5. Is what I'm trying to say. Okay. Now, that's 2 straight starts or 4 seamers up and curveballs down for Mitchell Parker. He gets the Miami Marlins again next week. Maybe he can do it. It's a very, very desperate and dire stream. I'm not going to do it in 15 teamers, just so we're clear. Emmett Sheehan had the surprise start because they decided, you know what? We're not going to let Shohei Ohtani pitch this turn. He's going to go over the weekend. Fine. So this was against the Pirates, 4.2 innings of 200 runs, 5 hits, 2 walks, and 6 Ks. You can blame Brian Reynolds for about a double-digit pitch at bat in the first that resulted in a 3-2 pitch that left the yard for a solo shot and then another solo shot in the second. But that led to 84 pitches overall as he just couldn't get out of that fifth. But 21 whiffs for a Gallows Pole. Yeah, he's legit. His slider was so good. 79% strikes, 9 over 29 whiffs, and 45% CSW. Oh my gosh, if he goes regularly, he would get Rocky Road next. Please, Dodgers, don't take that away from us. He will absolutely feast with that slider. Clay Holmes, the Adobe, is looking like a double bubble. That is, you put it, you know, it loses its flavor quickly after you think it's a good idea. Okay, 4.2 innings of 200 runs, 5 hits, 3 walks, and 6 Ks against the Tigers. And now he gets the Phillies, the Padres, and the Cubs. You don't want to have Clay Holmes on your team. You have Jose Quintana actually on the opposite. He just had his worst matchup against the Phillies, and now he gets a dream schedule of at Texas, St. Louis, and then in St. Louis, and then the Reds carpet. Oh my gosh. But he went against Philly, got the win, 6.1 innings of 300 runs, 7 hits, 3 walks, 6 Ks. Pretty much a very, very poor quality start. Honestly, this is just icing. You probably benched him and held on to him for those 4 next starts. If he decided, you know what, I'll just start him, see what happens. He got a win. Congrats. Jason Alexander against the Yankees could not quite replicate what he did before against them, but it was generally the same. He allowed 2 home runs. One was a beast of a home run from Stanton. That looks a little bit like an illusion because it's a very short wall and left, but still, that was fun to see. Sorry, Alexander. 2 home runs here with that one, and Austin Wells were the difference, or really all of his runs. So 5 innings, 3 runs, 6 hits, 2 walks, and 6 Ks. He gets at Toronto next, and then at Atlanta, then hosts Seattle, and then at the Angels. And I just don't really want to do any of that. Maybe the Angels won. Maybe Atlanta, but I just feel like you shouldn't hold on to him. Adrian Hauser faced the Mariners. Almost went through this without any sort of problems. 7 innings, 400 runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 8 strikeouts. He allowed a 3-run shot on a first pitch sinker down the pipe to Julio Rodriguez in the sixth. Oh, so close. You know, it was a 4-run sixth. But yeah, you're going to start him in Chicago against the Sly Sox, which is fine because you don't really want to start Adrian Hauser in Tampa Bay. You don't really want to start anyone in Tampa Bay. It's not a good place to pitch. Ramon Marquez started and, of course, it didn't go well. Cade Povich against the Padres, a disappointing one because it was 5 innings, 4 runs, 7 hits, 3 walks, and 3 Ks. Yes, he did get a win, sure, but really it's because he pitched terribly. Sinkers and four seamers had to fill the zone, and too much so. And it's all because the changeup and the curve had zero feel. And I even take that back. The sinker did at times. It was donut command. But boy, it had a 16% NC rate. And it had a sub 50% strike rate, that sinker. Oh my gosh. But yeah, we are going to start Cade Povich now. I apologize. Because he does get Pittsburgh next. And then he gets at Chicago. White Sox. And then hosts the Rays. That's good. You want this. It could be 2 wins in there. Could be multiple quality starts. I think he's going to fix this. I think it's just a bad day at the park. You have Robbie Ray disappointing many in Coors 4.2 innings. A lot of these 4.2 innings games yesterday. 4 runs, 7 hits, 1 walk, and 8 strikeouts. He got singled out in the 5th, and it was so frustrating because he did all the things you want. His velocity, remember I was worried about that at 91 and 92? Yeah, it's 94.5. So that's 94, 95. That's great. He lived upstairs with it beautifully. And then the slider was underneath. It was an amazing Blake Snell blueprint. So I was hoping to see a good sign, really, that Robbie Ray would be a hold for Arizona in the next 2. I know it's been rough, guys, but this is 19 whiffs, 32% CSW, and he just had a really rough 5th. It's just like things weren't going his way. He threw like 1 or 2 bad pitches, got some bad luck in there too. I'm holding on to him for both of the Arizona starts. Next, Shane Bieber also got some bad luck. He had so many random hits, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 5 runs in that 5th frame. But otherwise, I mean, he was just dominant. Actually, I'm so sorry, not the 5th frame, the 2nd frame. But it was 6 innings, 5 runs, 5 hits, 2 walks, and 6 Ks against the Reds in Great American Ballpark. He got the win. Don't worry about this with Shane Bieber. It was a stupid, stupid 2nd inning. Zach Littell against the Jays on the other side of it at home. Yeah, it didn't go well. 4.1 innings of 5 runs. And I don't want to start Zach Littell. The only time I'd remotely be interested would be at St. Louis, and that's a questionable start for me. That's on September 15th. You have Aaron Nola against the Brewers. 5 innings, 6 runs, 6 hits, 2 walks, 6 Ks, and he got bamboozled. It was a very tough 1st frame. 5 runs, he didn't get the outs he needed. His changeup landed over the fence with 3 men crossing the plate. And then he settled in after, right? He had the standard Nola command, a good curveball for whiffs. But unfortunately, you can't erase the, I believe it was a 5-run 1st inning. So, blech. You get questionable starts now for the Mets, and then I believe it's another tough one after that. If you need to drop somebody, I understand dropping Nola. I think that Nola is better than this. I think it was just a bad frame. I feel like it's hard saying that, but these days happen, and it's up to you. Mets are a good offense right now, so I totally get it. It's anxiety-inducing. Nestor Cortez against the Orioles also just had a terrible day. 4 homers allowed. I mean, this is more of like, oh boy, okay. Thing is, he gets the Reds carpet and Rocky Road next. So it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Unless he's not pitching next time, he's injured, which I don't think he is, we are going to start him for those 2. And then George Kirby, he got singled out. Literally 10 hits, no home runs here with just 1 strike. And how am I supposed to butter my bread with this? He didn't pitch nearly as badly as you'd think. They just jumped on all of his stuff. He threw sliders. They hit the sliders. 6 hits on 7 fastballs in play. Are you serious right now? I mean, it's just, come on. He deserved better than this. It's very painful, George Kirby, but like, he's going to be fine. You got to keep going with it. All right, that is it. So my name is Nick Pollock. Good luck this weekend. And may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.